Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Can trade talks this morning actually reduce general economic uncertainty? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. China's Vice Premier Liu has arrived at the office of the U.S. Trade Representative in Washington for talks. The New York Times reports today that the U.S. might be willing to give licenses to the Chinese telecom equipment company Huawei, which has been on a banned list, but in exchange for some Chinese concessions, including perhaps more intellectual property protections. Financial market participants are telling us that the status of the trade war is their preoccupation. Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax advisory firm Grant Thornton. Good morning.
Good morning.
So in this newsroom, we have this impulse to, you know, watch like with great attention to any developments in today's U.S.-China trade talks. But, you know, regardless of what comes out of that, do we end up with less uncertainty?
Well, there lies the rub. The problem is, even if we were to get, say, a mini deal or a partial deal, no matter what we get in terms of negotiations between these two highly contentious countries, there still would be this major hurdle to clear, and that would be clearing bipartisanship in Congress, which is not very happy with China at the moment, nor is anyone else at this stage of the game.
Right, because if there was some partial deal, some incremental steps to lower tensions, that is not actually what the Trump administration is looking for, or really anybody who wants to fix what's wrong in the world trade system is looking for.
Exactly. One of the biggest problems is not only China's subsidies of their industries, but also the forced intellectual property transfers that they have when companies come over to China to work in China. And that's not something they're even willing to discuss.
By the way, back to a previous point, it does require bipartisan cooperation to get this through the U.S. Congress. That doesn't seem to be the mood at the moment.
That's an understatement. I think the tensions in Congress are certainly pretty high at this point in time, but there is bipartisan support against China, which is another thing to keep in mind.
Diane Swonk, she's the chief economist at Grant Thornton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And the Chinese news agency Xinhua just reported that Vice Premier Liu says he is willing to reach an agreement with the U.S. on matters that both sides care about. World leaders met earlier this month to talk climate change in New York. This week, it's mayors from about 100 of the world's largest cities having their own summit in Copenhagen. It's called the C40. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports.
Cities have leverage, says former Toronto Mayor David Miller, now C40's Director of Diplomacy. They're where most people live.
National action is failing, so we're doing what is scientifically mandated to help keep global heating to no more than 1.5 degrees.
He says C40 cities have already pledged to stop emissions from rising by next year and to cut them in half by 2030. And Berkeley professor Ken Alex says cities do have power.
Most of land use decisions are local. Cities make decisions about where and how things are built.
They could impose new energy efficiency standards or procure electric buses instead of diesel. And they'll try to do it all without major budget impacts because there's no dedicated city climate change fund. So Alex says for the most radical changes, cities will need to seek private capital. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Given the experience of the deadly wildfire sparked by Pacific Gas and Electric power lines last year in California, utility companies in that state this week have been preemptively shutting off power to prevent another disaster, this amid dry, windy conditions. Well, PG&E turned off about three-quarters of a million customers yesterday, forcing, for instance, classes to be canceled at the University of California, Berkeley. A new phase of shutdowns is underway this morning. Michael Wara directs the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford. He calculates that just yesterday's outages could cost $2.5 billion using these assumptions.
In particular, I assume that big industrial customers are not impacted, and that's consistent with what we're observing. The refineries are up and running. They have electric power. The big tech headquarters are also not blacked out. It's more that the homes and, small commercial customers in these communities that are impacted by fire risk are in the dark right now.
Michael Wara at Stanford, his power was blacked out even as he spoke with us. Also this morning, Japan Airlines had to cancel 90% of domestic flights from two large Tokyo airports, Haneda and Narita, due to a typhoon.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. Is the 2017 tax law cutting into home prices, especially in high property tax parts of the country? A piece published this morning in ProPublica and Fortune magazine calculates that house values are 4% lower than they would normally be because people figure in tax deductions when they decide what they can pay, and some of those deductions were taken away in the tax plan. The calculation here is that home values nationwide have taken a $1 trillion hit. The author of the piece is a familiar voice on this program, Alan Sloan, ProPublica editor-at-large. He had consulted with the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, Mark Zandi, who had sent him a county-by-county ranking of where the house values took the biggest hit. Number one, right at the top of the list, was the very county where Sloan himself lived.
Well, what can I tell you? Zandi and I were talking about stuff, and he says, I've got this list to send you. And he had it in order ranked biggest loss to least, and I open it up, and there I am in Essex County, and the adjacent county, which is Union County, New Jersey, is number three.
Now, many parts of so-called red states are not feeling this pinch, and some first-time home buyers might be benefiting from lower home values. I talk further to Sloan about his piece today. It's in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed if you miss it on the air. And life insurance companies have long dinged customers who smoke. Now one of the biggest, Prudential Financial, is going to charge more to people who vape, who use electronic cigarettes. Until now, the vapers have been classified in the same risk pool as non-smokers. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.